Loud enough, Andrew?
It will be.
Okay.
Is it green?
It's green.
Okay. Andrew will tweak you.
All right. Thank you, Pastor Jerry. I know I only have 35 minutes, and I do want to leave it at the end for a question or two, which you might have. And if you don't now, maybe you will after you hear from some things of me. So I want to do something here. First off, I want to remind you that my wife and I this year celebrate 53 years with this church. You've been supporting us for 53 years. And saying that, I want to read you a little passage of Scripture. Now, this is not going to be a teaching time, except it might come out of these few verses. This is 3 John 1, 5 through 8. In the King James translation, the New King James, which I cut my teeth on the King James, some years later forced myself to move to the New King James, and there's a long story about what's happened since that I'll tell you maybe about that later. So, John says, writing to this man called Gaius. Now, we don't know a whole lot about him, but this is what he said, zeroing in on Gaius. Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. You have been fellow workers for the truth in our situation, not to mention all the others that are on that board, for 53 years. And from the bottom of our hearts this morning, we want to thank you. I can't tell you how many times Patty and I said down through the years, this can only happen because people back home are praying. And you have been amongst those who have been doing that. And as John kind of just clapped for Gaius as he had been doing this, we don't know whether the church was in his home. We know some other things, and again, that's not a message I want to preach this morning, but I wanted you to gather strength from this. This is what you folks who have not been called to go have been doing all these years. You've been fellow workers from the truth. You've supported us and all of those out there. And who knows what else you have been doing that nobody hears about, that you do from your homes, different ways, different situations. So the first thing on our hearts was to tell you how much we've appreciated that. Our mission work, as we'll explain through the day, is not going to end with the translation, unless God has other plans. We always leave room for that because God has always showed us what we learn from Proverbs, that man devises his thoughts, and as long as his heart is right, then God guides his steps, and he does that in such different and wonderful ways. And maybe we'll get to talk about some of that through here. So that's the first order of business. Now I want to rehearse some things that you already know about, but I want to put them into context here. So 14 years ago, I was preaching in that pulpit when halfway through, I had this strange sensation in my body. It was tingling. You know how it is when you sleep wrong on your arm and then that starts to come undone? Well, that's what's happened to me for 14 years. It's never left me except for seasons. And that was the beginning of Lyme disease. I had to be helped at the end. I was able to finish. I had to be helped to the car. And that was the beginning of a very strange way that Lyme's has attacked me. We won't go into this except to say that Lyme, you probably met a number of people. There's 40 symptoms you can have with Lyme. Nobody has all of them. And everybody has a little mixture of those. Well, I had that, started 14 years ago. And for the next 4 months, it was awful. But the doctor diagnosed it, at least figured it out. He never saw it on a blood test or anything. He figured out what was going on and got me on the medicine. And within 5 months or so of the beginning, I began to snap out of it. And we thought, yay. But 9 months later, it came back. We were on the field. Fortunately there, I knew what was happening. I was able to get the medicine and get right on it. And again, 4 or 5 months of all that foolishness, being in bed hours at a time, days at a time, it began to go away. Once again, we said, yay! And 9 months from the start of the second time, let's see now, let me get straight here. Might have been a little bit more than that, but roughly, and we were home this time. That was 2012, when it hit us for the hit me for the third time, and for the next 6 years, the first two or three years, I was in bed almost all the time. 5-6 days a week, I would be in bed just out of it. Over that time, from 2012 to 2016, 2018 actually, it began to diminish. By 2018, I was down to 2 or 3 days a week. I was worthless. It had been way more than that all those other years. Thus, for these 11 years, this is the second time I preached in 11 years because I could never count on what day those symptoms were going to hit. And the churches, you included, have been really gracious. Normally, a missionary that exempts himself from that kind of time, he's done. His support's gone. God has never allowed that. Our churches are fewer these days, but the ones that are still with us, and others have left because of financial reasons, not really because they didn't think we were doing right, because we were still working at those times. It's just that we couldn't hardly do it the way we wanted to. So 2018, we started to get better, and right away then entered our life my daughter's diagnosis of lymphoma. And most of you know that we lived through that. We still do. So, you know, as that got underway, COVID hit all of us. And we were just all reeling from that, plus that. And the end of that story is, I don't want to drag this out. That story ended. Kelly went home to be with Glory just 3 years from just a few days ago, February 27th. COVID still went on for a little while longer there in 2022, roughly right in there. But right around in 22, things began to change. And we began to sense God was up to something again. So now I have to back up. So kind of just slip back now, right in the middle of all that Lyme stuff, 2016. The first couple of years of Lyme, that when it really hit me, I didn't do that well. And the Lord knows, I didn't display it outside a lot, but Patty heard it a lot. I was angry. I was so sick most of that time. I just couldn't understand what was going on. I came across in our reading Isaiah 40, 31. But they that wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall take up wings as eagles. They shall run and not weary. They shall be walking up. And from that point on, the smile came back. The understanding came back. We know that God allows Satan to work, always under God's control, in people's lives for a reason. I don't fully understand those reasons, but we clung to those verses until about 2022, and all of a sudden I began to know God's up to something. When we started to figure out how can we get back together with Pino and Rosa, because the infrastructure of Venezuela is so bad. Let me give you a quick illustration. When we first got there in 74, the world's largest dam was being built, the Guri Dam. Huge dam, 18 generators. You know how many work today under the leftist ruling? 3. It takes 2 years to bring one of those generators back online. They used to sell electricity. Now they can't even run their country. Blackouts here, blackouts there. Just an example of what was going on, what still is going on there. All right. But we began to sense that God was going to put something together, so we began to think and pray and let people know, and we thought, how can we do this? Well, maybe we can bring them to the States. Tried and tried to get Rosa visa. Would you believe we put in requests way back then? They gave her a date for October of 2024 to meet at the embassy. Well, God had other plans. My son Ken owns a condo in Costa Rica that they rent out. And he said, look, I'll stop the renting and you two can go there. And we thought, that's it. We won't have to pay for that. My son is there that can help out and things like that. And so we began the ball moving. And it wasn't long before we found out that isn't going to work either, because Costa Rica had so many Venezuelans in the country. And over the years, they decided to break relations altogether with Venezuela. So they did that, And we found out that they were never going to get even a tourist visa to get into Costa Rica, because they figured people got in, we're going to stay. And that's what they did there. And as you know, that's what they do here as well, if they can even get one of those. Okay, so then we are, months again, going up. Well, and then all of a sudden God said, why not the neighboring country of Colombia? And so I began to do some research, and Keith got a hold of me and said, look, I have people I know there on the ground. In Bogota, we have people. And through that, I began to start reaching out to people in Bogota, and they were willing to help. They told us where things to go, whatnot. We thought, that's it. So then it began, and you know the story. Eventually, we were able to go. And somehow the Lord said along the line, it isn't Bogota where I want you. It's Colombia, but it's Medellin, not Bogota. We thank the Lord for that, because Patty nearly froze in 80-degree weather in Medellin. You can imagine what she would have done where the higher temperatures are like between 40 and 60 instead of 60 and 80. And other things have taken place as well. So at that point, we, September 4th, took off for Colombia. Now, let's see if we can bring this to life. Okay. Now, we were there to work. So I didn't think when we were there, let's set up a fancy slide presentation for our churches so that they can see what happens. I thought of that about a week ago. And so all I have is just a smattering of pictures to give you a little idea. This is us freezing in Bogota. When you land from Atlanta to Bogota, you get out, everybody has to go stop there. We were in line there with 500 people. That, by the way, it does. Okay, anyway, that's Patty with the backpack, and I'm just to the right there with the other backpack on. So we were going through. That's where you get your tourist visa for 90 days and so on. So then, of course, they flew down that same night. We flew later on down to Medellin. And this is Pino and Rosa and Patty and I together. You'll get some closer up shots than that. In front of the buildings where we eventually lived on the fourth floor. And you'll see kind of a shot of that in just a minute. Now, when we first got there, we were in one condo. And I can't tell you. Yeah, okay. Down there, you would call it a condo. It was an apartment, okay. So we were in one, but the lady who was helping us from New York, and there's a whole beautiful story behind that. I won't go into that. She said, now look, this you might not want to stay here because of what. This is just one I got so you could get in there. And then from there, she organized 12 others. And we were looking for a certain thing, and this is what we were looking for. One of those little apartments that had two bedrooms and it had an office. And this was the one we found, because this was the place we were to spend hundreds and hundreds of hours in the next months. So there we are in our glorious attire and in our places, me in front of my computer. And I didn't always have to do that. Finally, I adjusted things so that I could look more straightly there. And that's Pedro, affectionately known as Pino. Long story behind that. That's short for Pinocchio. But I won't go into all that story. All right, here's a better shot that you can see Pedro face to face. Pedro and his wife came to work with us in 1991. Beautiful story behind that. They had both accepted Christ separate times in the village at just previous to 1991. And we were praying. At that point, we were ready to leave Venezuela for good. Because at that point, the Supreme Court of Venezuela, we had a court case before them, 1989. We lost it. That is when we were barred from the Indian territory forever. We're not barred from Venezuela per se. Maybe I didn't make that clear. We can go back there, but we can never enter the national confines of where the Pemón are located. It's a 5,000 square mile area. So anyway, we were going to leave. We were just outside of those where we had built our base, or where we were getting ready to build our base. We didn't know it then, because we were ready to leave. We said, Lord, if nobody comes, we have to have somebody work with us. No translator can ever do this alone. No one. And I am the least of ones that could have done it alone. Next thing you knew, on our doorstep came this couple that wasn't a couple then. They had met and married. I wish I had time to tell you the story. But anyway, I don't. So they said, we're here. We want the New Testament in our language. What can we do? And that's when the work began then in earnest on the translation work. We decided to stay. God did the wonderful job of opening up. At that time, we were in the city, 2.5 hours north of where La Paragua, where we spent 14 years or so before, of course, Chavez came to power, and eventually every missionary was excused. They all had to leave. The only ones that are there now do not let anybody know in the government terms that they're missionaries, because they're just simply not allowed in a leftist country. All right. Okay, we can just move on a little bit. There's not a whole lot here. We were down there to work. We weren't down there to play. So Patty and I, we went to church on Sunday. We went down to the grocery store. We went to a mall when we had to pay a monthly fee for our telephones that we got through being in Colombia. You kind of needed them to get around. We didn't go anywhere. We didn't visit museums. We didn't visit anywhere. We would have loved to do that. This, as you see here, is a building under construction going up. Well, I'm not a good one, but I'm a builder. And so I began to say, wow, I've never watched this before. So between this one, which was like three blocks in front of us, and this one, which was a quarter mile away, this was our pastime when we took a break from working on the translation in the afternoon, early mornings. We watched both buildings, the last five floors, go up. Wouldn't you know, I didn't bring my binoculars. But because I wanted to know, well, how did they do that? Well, you suppose they'd let me go over there? And I figured I better not even ask that one. But this was our recreation thing. Patty even got interested, which you know is a great thing, because she's not interested in me getting involved in doing anything like this. Though if I were 20 years younger, I got an idea. All right, so Medellin by, this is twilight. You can see it's just the sun's going down. And then the lights come on. Absolute beautiful scene. Medellin ringed by 7,000 to 8,000 foot mountains. The floor level is 5,000 feet. We were up the sides of one of those mountains, about 6,500 feet. 4.3 million people live in the valley there. And just a beautiful place. As most of you know, Medellin was the home of the horrible drug dealer called Escobar, right? Pablo Escobar, I think his name was, who eventually declared war on Colombia. And in his time, which was the late 70s, 80s, he and his organization killed something like 27,000 policemen trying to just overthrow the country is what they were. Well, they finally got him. And somehow the people of this valley and the churches that are there have so changed the atmosphere. It is so different from Venezuela, where we spent a lot of time. Patty and I would, because we're older, get to the edge of the street. And in Venezuela, if you stepped out, you're gone. You're done. They'll run you right over. These people actually would stop. At one point, there was a guard watching a building, and he would come out and stop the cars for us and let us go across. And when we were ready, he'd stop again. And we just weren't used to this. People were so friendly everywhere we went. And this is what we meant. And we... We enjoyed thoroughly our time there. Here's a shot with us with Rosa. Rosa considers us mom and dad. Her dad is still alive, barely. I'm not sure he's going to make it. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But this is just a shot from the 23rd floor up above us. We were on the fourth floor. This is the 23rd, not looking towards the valley, but looking down the mountainsides there. I'll just get through these again. The girls ran the kitchen, the cleaning of the house. We worked like this, hand in glove, just like we had been apart over 11 years. And just like it was back then, they just picked right up again. We didn't have to tell them what to do. Rosa slipped into her role. Pino slipped into mine. And this is how we worked. And oh, did we work, which is why after 5.5 months, though we didn't plan to come home, it appears to be working out very well. And we'll tell you more about that. Now, what is the time them buzzers are going to start going off?
20 is your first one. 20 after.
20 after. Okay. I got it.
5 minutes later, the two buzzers.
All right. I got to move along because I want to leave this. So, like I said, the only times we got out of the apartment was church and this. And normally, we had to shop in a regular shopping store like you have here. Problem is, from our apartment, it was between a 35 and a 30 and 35 degree walk down. Fun. and then coming back up, carrying bags. Well, our doctors eventually told us, stop that. Anyway, I won't go into telling you why, but I had some heart trouble, and so did Patty. Anyway, this was where she was in an area. This is a 20-acre area with 300-foot-long storage things. This is where all the farmers from all of that part of Colombia would come and sell their wares in a major way. It's called a mayorista. You could go in there and buy anything you can imagine that was grown in Colombia. Probably if you knew the right people, even drugs, but we didn't know anything about that. Okay, now this is, church there is held in a house, and because they had to overflow, they had a place outside where they built a roof, and the breeze could blow, and it was a better place to stay away from sickness without having to wear those dreaded things. And so we always sat outside. Otherwise, we'd show you that. This is the send-off they had for us. This is the pastor and his wife, Carlos, and his wife, Jeanette. Wonderful people. This is a church that has three elders. They rotated preaching. They tag-team preached through the book of Acts. I have never heard better preaching in my life. It was like a seminary class every week, but practical, right on the ground, and yet telling you things, wow, people just don't normally hear. And these guys were loving, and the church was a loving place. And even though we weren't able to get into the homes because of our work and things that were going on there, they enjoyed having us, had a great send-off and prayer time for us, and we just really appreciated that. So this is Pedro and Rosa together. You get a better look at them. They're like 53-ish now. Of course, we knew them when they were, yeah. So they're leaving. This is when we said goodbye to them. Maybe. They had to leave from the same place. Somebody took pictures when we left. Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, that's right. They have been living for the past 5 years in La Paragua. 5 years, for 5 years, no water, no electricity, no internet, of course, and no propane. But that place is dead. Which will lead us right now into the rest of what I want to say before I can give some time for questions. Get my act together here. Yeah, see, not looking at my notes. I already forgot to mention that promise. We reduced that promise in Isaiah 40:31, flying, running, walking. Well, in beginning September 4th, when we got on an airplane to go there, God began our time to fly. Now, I'm going to be 80 years old in just a month or so, and so I don't know how long I'm going to fly. But even after that, we're going to get to run. And then we're going to get to walk, and then it's home to Jesus. And God is unfolding this little by little. And like we say, it's already changed a little. We expected to be there through September. Probably wouldn't have been the way it's working out, but even still. So we're back. What happened was both Rosa and Pino are diabetics. Rosa has, on top of that, rheumatoid arthritis, not the beginning of it, because what we saw was just a long story. I'm trying to cut this short. She is supposed to have exams every 3 months because the medicine you take, much like many doctors' medicines, is ruining her on the inside. So they have to be watching. How bad is it hurting the liver and the pancreas and the kidneys and whatnot? She missed that because she was so excited about getting ready to go. Got to Colombia, couldn't find the medicine that she can only find in Venezuela. Later she found something close, but that medicine ran out, and she began to have that arthritis, which wasn't just this. It hit her here, it hits her here, it hits her here, it hits her, and she was just twisted. She could hardly even walk. I took one look at her and I said, that's it. No way are we going to leave her here when it's the doctors back home that have been following her for 5 years. They know where this is headed. They know what they have to do to tweak things to get her on the right medicine. We began to make plans to leave right then. We had about 2 weeks left, and in that last 2 weeks, God allowed Pino and I, with our extra work, to be able to get to that place that Bibles International said, this is where we want to get you. When you are to this place where we're at now, then we will take over in the sense that we will then look at this with you. Three-way Zoom is going to happen, or WhatsApp will happen now. We will look at this, and we will lead you through 1,830-some Greek words, the consistency of how you've translated that throughout the New Testament. And in accordance with what we see and what you've already done, that can take from, they didn't tell me this in the first place. The first place, they said, that'll take 9 months. What they meant was, if you get to a certain area and you've done a good enough job, it could be as little as 3 months. Well, they still haven't told us, but it's going to be more closer now. The finish will come in 3 months once we're able to get rolling again. Okay, a little bit more. I don't want to miss anything here. So anyway, we got them on the plane, and we closed out all the rigmarole that you had to do with an apartment that you're renting and so on, and we came home. So right away, even before this, the Lord had said, you're going to have to get Pino out of La Paragua. There's no way. We haven't had internet connections for years. And even when we did get them, you couldn't see each other, which we need to do, and because of things we need to see on the board and so on. So the Lord said, we're going to move. You have to move him. So I made an executive decision to move them 2.5 hours north to the closest city, which we call CB. It's Ciudad Bolívar, the city of Bolívar. So let's just call it CB. So again, our beautiful friend in New York is coordinating this whole business. So from that point on, she started looking for apartments while we were just getting ready to leave. And she had set up apartments for them to go and look at. They've been doing that for the last week. They had one furnished, decent price. And at the last minute, that fell apart. And then other things happened, and Elma said, look, we're going to have to just take an empty apartment, get it down as low as we can, and then we're going to have to fill the apartment with the things that they need. So 3 days ago or so, they found that apartment. They have the keys. They're in it, but they're not living in it. Of course, they're not ready to sleep on the floor with the conditions that these kids are in. You can't ask them to sleep on the floor. I might do it. But you can't do that for very long. Yeah, right, nothing to cook. There's nothing in the apartment, it's bare. But it is in a beautiful place. Patty and I know where it's at. We used to shop right down below. There's a supermarket right there. Let me open it up for questions right now while I'm rattling on. If anybody has a question you've been holding, throw it at me. Pastor.
Yep.
I got to get
Tell
to that.
People what that is.
Okay, so years ago, we understood, because of my age and because of the smallness of the tribe, no more than 20,000 people, we had to make a decision, we made a decision that we probably would not translate the Old Testament. So we had a couple of churches, one especially that was interested in coming down when we were ready to help us do a major storybook of all, I wouldn't say all, but most of the great characters from the Old Testament that would give them a panoramic view so that in the New Testament, when they read the name Moses, they would be able to know who he was, what he did, what happened. Noah, David, some of the other kings, the prophets. So my partner Jim at that time went to a publishing house there in Texas. They not only gave him these books, it's a major booklet, beautifully colored, of course, all in English. Like each story would have 10 or 12 pictures with the captions under the life of Noah, the life of Adam and Eve, and so all that stuff. And they gave us permission to paste the Pemon over all of these things. So at that time, we only had about 12 or 13 churches. Now we have 45. We had a church come down, put that together. We gave one copy to each church at that time. Now my vision is to give one copy of that to each family who has believers in it. If mom or dad is a believer, we want that family to have one. And I'm not sure God will allow that, but this is our vision to do that. And Pino and I, as soon as the translation is done, we will be doing the same thing on that booklet that we've been doing on the New Testament, basically bringing it up to speed with the new, smoother, better ways to say things, which is basically what we did for the last 5.5 months, and we're still doing. Some of the churches back there in Venezuela are reading through every book that we just got through going through, and they're sending us back. They'll be sending us back things for the next month or so, even as we finish out with Bibles International. They will be, right up probably to the last moment, they'll be saying, we want to change in this word here. And sometimes that requires endless hours of work because it changes many things throughout the New Testament. Anyway, okay. Question?
I'm just curious about, like, okay, so did they not have an alphabet at all?
No. Okay, well, in a nutshell, that was why we spent a whole summer at Wycliffe's SIL, the Summer Institute of Linguistics. We went down there and learned the basics of language translation. We learned every sound the mouth is capable of making, 360-some sounds, and a symbol to go along with it. So in those early days, that's one of the things I was doing. I was listening for words, writing them down. After about a year of that, Jim and I began to work together, and we realized through the processes that we were shown down there that though they had 30 sounds that we could see and understand, pretty much we're sure there weren't any others. We only needed I have to think now. We only needed 19 of them. 7 of those are vowels, and 11 of them are 12 of them are consonants, something like that. Don't hold me to that right now. So then once we knew, then from that, we knew that there were only 3 of those sounds which didn't exist in Spanish. So we created a special little thing for them that could easily be made on the Spanish typewriter. And because we wanted to have this as close to Spanish as we could get it in as far as the reading parts of it, so that they, if any of them were being taught, and a lot of them were in the outlying areas, were getting into national schools learning Spanish, so that they could quickly note how this was done. So the U and the U and the apple, you don't know it, but the word apple starts with your glottis being closed. That's called a glottal stop. Glottal stop is absolutely necessary. From the glottal stop, there are words that sound that can be spelled exactly alike except for one letter, the glottal stop. I don't have any illustrations in my head right now. But anyway, we did this in the scientific method that we were taught. And over the years, when the people got saved, some of the older people would go to their kids or someone they knew who could read Spanish, and they would say, how do you pronounce that? And they learned to write what we were translating without, we did put on a little bit of literacy stuff, but nothing near what they do in other countries to really prepare the people. And so, yeah, it's going to be easily read right from the get-go. Okay? Any other? Yep. Mark?
I know at one time you didn't have a word for lamb, and that ever changed?
No. No. Now, with this particular language, and with any particular language, you either use a functional substitute or you simply use the word that's there, whichever you feel is best. Fortunately, in the outlying areas in the southern part of where the Indians are, there are people who raise goats and sheep. So it wasn't a far reach for them to just use the translation of lamb. And we had to do that with other words. Some people choose to use a totally different animal. Those are areas where we didn't want to get into with our translation. So we stuck as close as we could to help the people be able to understand. And if not, then we just taught them. We didn't have to teach them much, any more than we would teach an American, all the interesting things about a sheep, what the shepherd has to do to keep them in line, often breaking a leg so that they won't do that again, et cetera, et cetera. Mike?
How much influence does the Chinese in Venezuela? You hear a lot through our talking heads here. Are they deep into the religious aspects of curtailing what you can do and say? And are they also making a great presence in the infrastructure of rebuilding, but the control is drifting toward the Chinese?
Yeah, well, That started mostly after we left. While there were Chinese in the country, up until the time we left, their presence was not known very much. The first presence that became known came out of Cuba. Right away, they brought in spies to begin to look into what's going on in the way that Cuba does things, and Cuba led the way for a lot. And like I say, whatever's happening from China has happened since we've left. I really can't answer that, but I expect that that's being allowed the same way that they just opened the doors to Cuba, and they came in and did their thing. China is more than likely doing theirs as well.
Do the Venezuelans have a fair amount of free speech?
No. When they decided against us, when their Supreme Court decided against us, and was that the first buzzer?
That was the second.
Oh, no. What does that mean? The floor's going to open up? And okay. Because one of the things they decided against us was that Venezuela has freedom of religion here, not on the street. The churches are open, but they have put strict controls on it. No American or no foreigner can have any part of control of the churches. It all has to be Venezuelan. And they have certain things that they have to do, especially in social stuff. Because, of course, that's the way they get votes and whatnot, the social leftists and so on. That's the way they do their thing. And it's gotten worse since we've left. So Venezuela is a shambles. Right now, our friend that's been helping us calls it a fourth world country. That's how bad it is there. All right. I guess I better bring it to a close. Pastor,
thank you very much,
okay. Welcome.